It's the Les Paul Show.
Hello, this is Jerry Pippin. Recently, we did a program on Les Paul with Boston Red for his Blog Talk radio show. We were doing a tribute to this amazing talent, Les Paul. We're going to present portions of this program here in our tribute. We pick up the show with this recording in the background. It was made off the radio when AM radio was the only thing there. And the NBC radio network, which broadcast the 15-minute Les Paul show each week, used AT&T phone lines to distribute their programs around the country. This is his version of Begin the Begin. Let's bring that music into the 21st century. This is our tribute to Les Paul.
Incredible when you think about it. When we put it up on our website at jerrypippin.com, you know, you put the picture and the name and then the date they were born and when they died. And 1915 to 2009. And he had just made 94, by the way. Had not been 94 over a week, I don't think.
Thanks to Boston Red for allowing us to use this program as a tribute to Les Paul.
Infected or influenced, ever how you want to term it, by jazz, but he played around with country music for a while. In fact, you were telling me, didn't you, that he had a country name that he
right.
recorded
Rhubarb, under? Rhubarb Red, the Deep Ellum Blues we talked about during our pre-production was one of the songs that he played as Rhubarb Red.
And some of the things he did with his wife, Mary Ford, who preceded him in death, and they actually divorced, I think, in 1962, had a country influence, no doubt about it. But he was quite a talented guy. Another thing I hadn't realized, and maybe you did in your research, he actually started experimenting with the electric guitar in 1941.
Right, he did. At a club,
he had a board, actually. They brought it into clubs, and he'd plug it in and play it. And everybody would kind of marvel at it. But finally, I think by 46 or 47, he decided to put some sort of wings on the end of it so it looked more like a guitar.
Yeah, he collaborated evidently with the Gibson Guitar Company, and he created something, according to the Wikipedia here, called the Gibson Les Paul.
Yeah, it's the best-selling guitar, I believe, that Gibson Guitar Company's ever had. And that was really predicated on a hit that he had in 1952, I believe. You know, in the early 50s, Les Paul and Mary Ford were hot on the Billboard Hot 100 and on Your Hit Parade. I don't know if you remember that show or not. But they had
a little early for me there.
Songs.
A little early for me there. I recall a little bit of the hit parade.
Yeah. They didn't actually appear on the hit parade, but the
right.
hit parade people did show.
Charts, right.
But they
right.
hit songs every week, and Les Paul and Mary Ford had several. Vaya Con Dios was probably the biggest, but there were all kinds of great songs.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll go over some of them here.
We will. He also did some work with George White, blues artist. Very interesting, the kinds of, you know, music that he was, you know, that he was able to do, working there in St. Louis, evidently on radio, and later in Chicago, traveling around your area of the country. In fact, he was in an automobile accident out there.
Yeah, in Oklahoma, as a matter of fact. And to show you, and when I said he was determined earlier in our conversations, the fact that most people, that would have ended their career playing the guitar, because he really couldn't move that arm or shoulder for a while. But I think he invented his guitar, or manufactured in a way that he could play it without having to move too much.
Right, yeah, and he continued to play roughly another 60 years or what have you.
And actually, all of his major hits came much later after that accident.
Much, much later.
In 1952, 53, 54, the early 50s. In fact, throughout the 50s, Les Paul and Mary Ford were a mainstay on pop music stations. And the interesting thing is that he played sweet music, but all the rock and rollers, they used his inventions to the ultimate. You know, he's the guy that started the Echo thing.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Evidently, they were talking about that. And
so I guess Elvis would have been nobody if it hadn't been for Elvis, for Les Paul.
Right, right. Yeah, oh, yeah. Elvis would, right, that's right. He would not have been there. Les Paul was.
And then you look at the hard rock guitars like Jimi Hendrix and things like that. Les Paul made that possible with his inventions on how the electric guitar, you know, progressed.
Right.
And I guess his biggest claim to fame really is multi-track recording.
Right. That's right.
You got to stop and think about how he did this when he first did the original hits. This had to be the most painstaking thing you would do. That was back when they didn't have multiple tracks. So what would Les Paul do? He would take more than one tape recording, and he would put them and run them through a board, and then mix them manually. And he literally would take the tape with a razor blade and splice his creations. In other words, he'd take his wife, Mary Ford, who could do 10, 12, 14 tracks, but she couldn't do them all at once like they do now in a recording studio. He did them over and over and over.
Here is a good example of that country flavor with Mary Ford and Les Paul doing multi-track recordings.
My baby's coming home, and I'll be there to meet him. With kisses I will greet him. When we're all alone, my baby's on his way. When he arrives tomorrow, he'll banish all my sorrow. What a happy day. By train, by plane, and even over the sea. Bring back my darling to me. My baby's coming says he won't deceive me. He promised not to leave me, never more to roam. Says he won't deceive me. He promised not to leave me, never more to roam.
country song, My Baby's Coming Home. It's really amazing, Boston Red, what he could do.
Very amazing. No doubt about that. This mixing and his, I was looking here, also produced, the reel-to-reel audio tape recorder. That was part of his thing, too.
He's one of the first people to take that and develop it into four tracks.
Okay.
And then it progressed from there. But he literally started when it was still mono and would take we take it for granted now, and actually this technology is outdated, but for the majority of my career in broadcasting, we would take tape and a razor blade and some splicing tape and literally cut wherever we wanted an edit. In other words, you would make it a diagonal slice so you wouldn't screw up the sound and make it go like that. Because all of that's magnetic tape, so all the little magnetic pieces would kind of gather around that razor blade.
Okay.
So you'd have to take a single-edged razor blade and cut it diagonally so that there wouldn't be a whole lot of this, I call it noise, there that would cause a click or a pump or a thump. And so people became very artful of that, and nobody was better than Les Paul because he started when nobody had envisioned eight tracks. In other words, a singer in his day would go into a recording studio and you'd have a mic for him and a mic for the guitar and a mic for the piano player and a mic for the trumpet player, and it was what you got was what you got. Now, as you know, in a recording facility, the trumpet player may come in 2 weeks later and put his part in there. And the guy that did the voice track, he may come back and redo it after it's all done again. And so, but Les Paul and Mary Ford are the ones that actually pioneered this, and Les Paul actually did some instrumentals with his own skillful playing, mostly in the jazz idiom, where he showed off this ability. It sounded like there were Les Paul was playing more than one guitar at the time.
Yeah, it was truly amazing here. I was looking a little bit of this. We'll talk about some of these songs here. How High Is the Moon?
A major hit by Les Paul and Mary Ford, and it was an up-tempo song, and there's some guitar riffs in there that would be impossible to play for one guy, except for the fact that he re-recorded it several times. So he was actually playing with himself. My favorite Les Paul music, other than his jazz, which I really dig, to use that old, outdated term.
It'll be back.
Basically, what I liked was his sweet music. He did some great jobs of some great ballads. And there was an emotion or a feeling there, not only with him, but when Mary Ford was recorded with him. And later on, you know, he had an album that won a Grammy, I think, in 2000-something, 2005 or something like that.
Right.
And it was with several artists. And he was at his best, really, when he had some other talented people with him, even though at the same time, it seemed like kind of a paradox. He's the guy that didn't need anybody except a bunch of tape recorders.
Kind of interesting. Bye Bye Blues was another song.
He did some great blues songs, some great guitar songs. I put him right up there with B.B. King, and a lot of people would say, no, he doesn't have quite the feel, and he may not. But he certainly was had a technique that few jazz artists could rival. There's another guy, you know, from my hometown, Barney Kessel. He was a well-known studio guitar player, and he was very good. I don't know what it was in the water around here, but we had a lot of good guitar players. Another thing Les Paul made possible was back in the 50s in country music, there became something we used to refer to it as a fuzz guitar. In other words, Marty Robbins had a couple of hits with songs like that. in which the guitar would was not like the steel guitar, remember, of the old Bob Wills stuff. It was a guitar chord that seemed to hang on and almost to a distortion level. And it was kind of a cross between Jimi Hendrix with complete distortion and maybe something with half distortion. But it was very popular in the Nashville sound, especially in the 50s and early 60s. And Les Paul's the first one that actually experimented with that.
Well, Les Paul was a dynamic person. He also did quite a bit of work with Chet Atkins' brother. You know, Chet Atkins, no doubt about it, was the man with the guitar.
Yeah, well, Chet had the job to make sure he was, for sure. He was A&R director at RCA.
Right.
In Nashville.
Right, yeah.
And I'm not taking anything away from him, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying. But he certainly had an ability to show his wares that few other guitar players had.
He honestly did.
He could go on and do his own session any time.
Right, and he did country, he did jazz, he played with orchestras. He was really very, very good at mastering, you know, the guitar. And then his brother, I think it was Charlie Atkins or something like that, it was the one Les Paul played with. But for me, Les Paul was a little different, more along his line, was really a guitar person. Now, whereas B.B., I think B.B., like B.B. said, he plays, what, one or two chords, and that's basically it. With BB.
Yeah.
A little bit different.
Les Paul had that down to an art.
Yes, he did.
He could go in and read charts, or he could wing it. Whatever he needed him to do, he could do. And for many years there, Les Paul pretty much was his own entrepreneur. He would just send finished product with him and Mary Ford over to the record company. They'd publish it and be a hit.
Well, that's pretty good. I noticed here.
So they didn't bother him much.
Okay.
Other than, when's your next song going to get here?
And he put out a lot of songs.
A lot of tunes. And, you know, one of the things, we've talked about all these great things Les Paul did, but, you know, the one thing that I admire more than anything else, and I guess it's because I'm getting up there in age myself, not nearly that old, but he was still working. Well, a year and a half ago.
He was still working, actually, in 2008. And perhaps, I don't know, he may have actually played in the jazz clubs in New York this year. I know he played in late 2008.
Yeah, and in fact, there was somebody, I think it might have been, one of the best salutes, I think, was from KMOX in St. Louis. And it's interesting that that was one of the best salutes, because back in those days, in the Midwest, if you're broadcast-oriented, you went to St. Louis, then you went to Chicago, you know?
As he did.
Yeah. Well, that was the career path for everybody.
Okay.
Kind of the way it worked.
It's just kind of strange, you know, with St. Louis.
Well, it's just right up the road.
Well, yeah, but, you know, St. Louis, I guess radio was there, but as far as the jazz, Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. Well, Kansas City was famous for it.
Because Charlie Parker was there,
sure.
Fellow out of your area down there, McShane, who recently passed away. He was out of there and was still out of there, you know, lived a long, long, long time. But the thing is, St. Louis, kind of a stop between.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of not necessarily the jazz genre itself, but just pop music.
Okay.
And you come out of, you know, like an orchestra, you play at the Chase Hotel, and the next thing you know, you'd be in at the Aragon Ballroom or someplace.
You'd be in Chicago.
Yeah,
evidently,
right.
He was there in St. Louis at, when we started, you know, this our research was with that particular radio station you just brought up there. But they announced that, and they were talking about, let's see if I grab that screen. They were talking about he worked with high-tech Bob Hella, I guess is his name, which was on that station for 25 years. Anyway, they're both in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame with him out there, and that was, you know, at the KMOX in St. Louis.
Yeah.
kind of interesting. I mean, the standpoint that, you know, how he moved on from there, Chicago, and finally on to New York. Now, I also see here that in 1950, a little before my time, he had his Les Paul show. It was a 15-minute show on NBC.
A lot of people, you know, back in those days, even up to 55, 56, 57, a lot of people had 15-minute shows. Perry Como even had one.
Yeah, he had one. Yeah, I recall his show.
Yeah, you know.
In fact, I think he graduated up to a 30-minute-an-hour show, did he not?
That was quite an interesting format back in those days. It was kind of like, but of course, broadcasting, we did a show recently about broadcasting. Broadcasting was different back then. The sponsors pretty well called the shots, and so they could buy 15 minutes a heck of a lot easier than they could an hour or a half hour. And so they would sign the talent. The advertising agencies themselves were mainly the producers. The networks basically just furnished studios and their leased AT&T lines out to the radio stations.
So, in other words, you were going to have a show.
It's kind of like what we have now. We call it the vanity radio. Some talk show hosts do this. They buy the time and resell it.
Okay.
That's kind of the way it all worked back then.
Yeah, I say TV show. We actually had a 15-minute radio program. Sorry about that. I was thinking of the TV shows. I don't know if he ever had a TV show, but doesn't say anything here. But, yeah, the radio shows, a lot of people had radio shows.
That was one of the requirements, I think, once you got kind of established.
Okay, but you'd get a...
A little radio show, and then you use that, you know, to work on things.
I can recall.
And that same format, the reason we got off on TV, as I mentioned, that they were still doing it on TV in the 50s.
Okay. I can recall hearing Les Paul and his band, many times on TV. Yeah. He would appear, you know, with various other of acts.
He was a big star before Les Paul and Mary Ford in the music circles, and not in the general population necessarily. Mary Ford and he with multiple recordings. And this technique hit the top 10 quite regularly, so they became big stars there. Then after his separation from her, a lot of people had given him up, but he still worked a lot.
Evidently he did. He won 2 Grammy Awards in 19... he won these 2 Grammy Awards, the 48 Grammys here, and it says in 2006... That's when he returned to do some live performance.
I mentioned 2005. It was
2006. At 90. And he, you know, just continued on working, I'm assuming, on the weekends or what have you, working.
I think he worked as much as he wanted to.
Yeah.
And a lot of people probably, the amazing thing here, we talked about at the beginning, 1915 when he was born. And you talk to people who are 30 years old, born 1979. Les Paul was already an old man by then.
Oh, sure.
And they don't really remember him.
No, but working some of the clubs, he was, in fact, I see here, he did, there was a tribute at Carnegie Hall to him, so... If you had Steve Miller there, and of course Pete Frampton, and
Boston Red, I want to take time to play my favorite Les Paul and Mary Ford song. I guess it was their biggest hit, "Vaya con Dios."
Now the hacienda is dark, the town is sleeping. Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love. Now the village mission bells are softly ringing. If you listen with your heart, you'll hear them sing. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love. Wherever you may be, I'll be beside you. Although your many million dreams away, say a prayer to guide you, to hasten every lonely hour of every lonely day. Now the dawn is breaking through a great tomorrow, but the memories we share are there to borrow. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my darling.
You know, many of us think about Les Paul and the sweet sounds of Mary Ford, but if it had not been for Les Paul and his inventions, there would be no loud rock and roll guitar music ever.
I've never heard whether or not, and I've never read, whether Les Paul liked hard rock and roll. I think he did to a certain extent because all guitar players like to get a few licks in. But modern rock and roll would not be around if it hadn't been for Les Paul and the electric guitar and the developments he made and the multiple track recording techniques.
Right. No doubt about it.
Those two things reached through all genres, from rhythm and blues to country to pop to you name it, to jazz.
Yeah, B.B. King and Lucille basically would not have been around.
Right.
No Elvis, no that.
No,
I guess Michael Jackson would have still been dancing, though, and singing.
Yeah, I'm just looking at some of Michael Jackson's work. We were converting it to our iPod TV page at jerrypippin.com.
Okay.
And
you've got video over there now.
Yeah, right. Oh, and I was looking at looking at the whole 14 minutes of Thriller, not just the clips.
Oh, I see.
And it's just incredible, Michael Jackson and his skill.
Now, getting off to a little bit here, but Jerry, when did you institute your video iPod part? I knew you had iPod.
It's a work in progress right now. It's getting really big. We made a deal with this production team that we're doing the documentary for.
Okay.
And they have all of the commercial latest product.
Okay.
And they do commercial work for regular broadcast houses and production companies.
Okay.
And we've got some good video already of some shows we're doing that rival really anything you see on the web. I hate to bat myself on the back like that, but I'm not really patting me. It's Anthony and Robert Miles,
okay,
of the Fast Walkers production team. And we spent some time today.
Okay.
On the technical end of this, this is far beyond anything that an old radio broadcaster has ever been involved in. And we're just trying to stay up with the crowd and doing things in widescreen, so that the iPod itself The coming thing is going to be you slip this iPod, and a lot of people are doing it already, into a, what they call a dock in your apparatus for your home entertainment center.
Right.
And the big wall screen.
Oh, I see. I got it.
Fills up with whatever you're doing.
Oh,
we're making stuff compatible to that.
Now, are you just confined to the iPod or any of those devices? In other words,
No, any devices. The Zoom came out with a new device this week, too.
Okay.
That handles it. But mainly the iPod is the big seller.
Right, and the others are coming along.
They've been arguing over formats. Now they're getting a little more compatible.
Yeah, the formats.
Our product, we were Microsoft originally with Larry Dickin. It's gone well past that. You and I have discussed that.
Right, yeah. You move now more mainstream. Of course,
we don't want to leave any of the Microsoft users out of there because that's still the majority users of the PC.
Right, but they moved to the MP3 format and,
We do that, and we still do a Windows format compatible for everybody, just simply because a lot of people don't. And, of course, naturally, ultimately, it'll all be Flash, it looks like.
Flash is out there.
And
that's especially for the what we call smartphones, the iPhone that sort of thing. Well, you've done some work with the iPhone. And there is conversion, get off a little bit of Les Paul, but this is a little bit about innovation. Various software products out there will convert one format to the other format. So in other words, we can put your Michael Jackson filter on the lady's iPhone we were talking about.
Yeah.
So she can get it.
That's her objective.
We will. And obviously you have that kind of, technology coming up there.
Yeah.
Now, I see you have also got past the licensing hurdles, of getting this stuff up because YouTube, had some problems. I imagine. They've had some problems with that.
You have to make kind of side deals with everybody, and it's too bad.
Right.
Obviously. Because, first of all, that's time-consuming.
I bet it is.
It gives lawyers jobs, but legal people. But secondly, it's not serving the artist in the long run. The artist thinks it is.
Right.
But what's serving the artist is the old, in my opinion, the old tried-and-true formula. And that's exposure. And the only way you get exposure is through broadcast. And it really is not important whether the broadcast is internet, digital, or an AM radio.
I would agree with you.
The point is people got to be listening to it. And so if they're going to choke us in digital broadcasting down to paying so much per person as a performance right, they may win in the short term, but obviously no one can afford really to do that unless they make side deals.
And I would assume probably what will happen a lot, too. There's a lot of...
And that's exactly what's happening, and pretty soon it's going to get so muddied legally, nobody's going to have any rights because you'll have all kinds of... you'll have all kinds of things that have been determined by courts which are in opposite of each other. And so basically then people end up making any money of the lawyers.
Yeah, it's no doubt a spaghetti soup. I mean, when you say side deals, you're basically saying third parties that own these rights or whatever they might be.
We don't deal with a third party at all. We deal direct with the artist or the publishing company or the record company.
I see. Okay. I was thinking, obviously, of something else.
Yeah, they use third-party sound decks.
Okay.
And basically what happens is you get these companies, it's a whole lot like the health industry. These executives of these companies are making a fortune, and the artist isn't making much money.
Right.
And they'll say, like the health industry, I mean, by that, you pay a lot of insurance premiums, and most of it's not going for their hospital bills, going for the perks of the people who work there, the insurance companies.
Right. So, yeah.
And so No, it's all out of kilter, and it's very difficult to do. But so, we decided to bite the bullet and do it, and we're offering a video TV now.
Okay.
And we'll do more. Basically, we want to use it as a support to our radio stuff. We're a radio broadcaster.
Okay. But, so you're actually going to also put on there, and you've been doing
some video.
Of
like, well,
some
like we have,
yeah,
we
some
just
of your own reports. Your
right,
own,
we
your
have some actual recordings of what we did on the radio.
Oh, okay.
And then we have some separate, actually, video programs.
Okay.
TV programs.
Oh, okay, I see.
That run
see.
In companion with each other.
I see. Yeah, more and more people on the net, that is, are going into, I notice MTV is doing that and some others,
yeah,
producing
exactly.
various kinds of TV programs for the net. And the idea behind this is that you can download these on the smartphone. Now, what's going to be interesting, the shakeout here is between these so-called iPods and these various other devices
yeah.
and this thing called the iPhone and these various other smartphones, which do the same thing.
Yeah,
the only difference is, you know, you can call people on those and you can turn off your refrigerator, you know, start your car, you name it, you can do that from the iPhone these days. You know, I could make a video
well,
here,
send
it to you right away.
We used some live feeds with the iPhone recently, and actually the quality was pretty good. It was amazing.
You were telling me that, yes. So, yeah, all that is shaken on the web. It's sort of like the woman in her email on the web. So you can email, you can download you on
yeah.
your smartphone, iPhone, and
right.
what have you. Now, do you think, Jerry, as we are wrapping up here, Les Paul in today's environment, had he started out, obviously he'd have to be innovative like you, but do you think that he would...
I don't know if the guy could survive that way today.
Okay.
I'd like to think they could. But it was very simple, if you stop and think about it. He had an idea, electrifying the guitar. He put it on the board so he wouldn't get electrocuted. It wouldn't actually do before or whatever. He brought that forward. Nobody had the technology for making multiple recordings, but he had an idea that if you took two or three recordings, ran through different mixers on your soundboard, that you could come up with a finished product that was pretty neat. And actually, the technical guys then took his suggestions, and he was technical himself to a certain extent, and developed the four-track recording, an eight-track, and then with 16, 32, 64. My God, I don't know when it's going to end.
Yeah, right, 64 tracks. Now you know, you can use software to create all kinds of things,
right.
You know, using a computer workstation, you can do all these things, as, you know, the host, that go into the clubs, the rappers, the DJ, whomever they call it, all this stuff is, you know, can be made up, electronically, take bits and pieces of Les Paul, your voice, and everybody else, throw them all in the soup. But my question was, like, for instance, if a young man, you know, from your area or wherever, went to St. Louis now to start in radio, his chances of getting to Chicago probably would be not very great. First of all, his opportunity to get on the KO or whatever station there in St. Louis,
yeah, yeah, no, actually,
right, would be very difficult in itself, I would think.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that before as well. If you're established... all this technology is pretty good. That's not to say that if you're not established, if you come up with a unique content concept or a program, and you get the right people to pay attention to you, then probably, you know, you can still make it big time. So I'm not saying the world's ending at all. The opportunities are different. And no longer, when I started in radio, you had to start a little town like where I live, Muskogee. Then you go to Tulsa, Oklahoma City, and then you go either to Kansas City or St. Louis or Denver.
Or maybe Los Angeles.
And then next step, but would be Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago or New York.
And, I think you went up to Frisco, right? Yeah, you were up in Frisco.
Yeah, right. Okay. And so,
a little different.
You know, now 8% of my listeners are in China.
Is that right?
And I'm here in Muskogee. So it's different.
Well, 8% of your listeners now in China, and maybe you'll have 25%, and it's that's where the action is.
You look at these stats, they're pretty interesting.
I bet they are, if you have 8% of your listeners.
And the blessing is we're heard all over the world, and the curse is that it's almost 50% now of out-of-the-country listeners.
Yeah.
And the curse there is, how do you make any money? But I mean, you got to have advertising people there too.
Well, that's right.
And then you got to have new technology to push those ads in those countries.
You have to push some local products, right?
Yeah,
yeah. No, that is what's happening. The corporations, all over America, that's happening. The people, more and more, you got 50% now of your 1.1 million listeners you have over there. And, I mean, that's a lot of people to be outside of North America, and it will obviously be more of, outside of North America.
Yeah.
So that means a lot for you, not only for you, but, and the content, but also for the Les Pauls of the world and the various musicians, right. The B.B. Kings, et cetera.
Well, I don't think we have a handle on how we're going to handle this worldwide marketing. It is the World Wide Web.
It is. And, it is that, yes. Well, I tell you, one man recently... passed away, was very good at worldwide marketing. He's going to be very good now, in his days, was Michael Jackson. I mean, his whole appeal was worldwide. And he's coming out, with the tapes that he made. They're going to make that into a film.
Yeah, his rehearsals.
You're right. You probably have a piece of that up on your thing there. And, I mean, that'll go on. And they're going to make more money off of Michael dead than they did literally alive. So,
I think they did that with Elvis.
They did. Elvis was selling more records.
In fact, today, we're doing an Elvis special because 32 years ago, Elvis passed away.
Right, he did. Yes, it was today, hey? Okay.
Yeah, it's 16th.
The 16th of August. Yeah, and Elvis made more money than most musicians were alive, literally, after he died. He didn't make that much money, when he was, when he was in the flesh. But afterwards, the money rolled in, and of course, they didn't have the internet. Now with the internet, any artist that has a Michael Jackson, whomever, will make a hellacious amount of money, out there.
I'm still waiting for that, but hellacious amounts of money.
Well, hellacious amounts.
It is possible.
It is.
A lot of people do.
It is possible. I don't.
So I would encourage anybody. I think what I would encourage anybody listening that wants to, to be successful in this business, in this new world, is the first place to be able to grasp a uniqueness and trueness to yourself. But at the same time, have an eye on commercialism, understand what people want. You may be the best piano player in the world, but if you're not playing the melody they want to hear, you're not going to go far.
That's right. You'll be playing to yourself. We know a few people like that claim they have the best music in the world, which they probably do, at least in their mind.
Yeah, we're not, and here again, all of that, we're talking about the arts. Okay, how commercial it gets and how much of a business it is, it's still art. It's still creativity, and to each his own. And what turns somebody on doesn't turn somebody else on.
Yeah, and I think look at B.B. King. B.B. King is in his 80s, and he's still touring around 200 dates a year.
There's a lot of us old guys out there. I'm not that old yet, but...
not in the 80s, for sure, and not touring like B.B. You imagine riding a bus up and down these highways.
Oh, I know,
highways.
But we do our share of traveling.
Well, that's right. You do. I guess you do more traveling than when I first ran into you.
Yeah.
I mean, you were more on a stationary thing,
Right,
at the,
right.
At the broadcast.
But anyway, the whole point is that... it's a different world... It's still youth-oriented. There's much more for people like me, senior citizen types, older people, than there ever was before. In other words, we're talking about the iPods. Statistically, people are really shocked to find out how many people over 35 are listening to devices.
That have an iPod.
Yeah.
Do you have an iPod, Jerry?
Yeah, and look at well, Obama even, well, he raised a big stink when he let everybody know he had a Zoom. Remember that?
Right. Yeah, but he always refers to it as his iPod.
Yeah, well, we all do.
Yeah.
And I have an iPod, too. Larry had a Zoom.
Okay, well, Larry, yeah, well, I don't have an iPod.
He never had anything that Microsoft didn't make.
I wouldn't doubt that. I don't have an iPod, so there you go.
we have people that actually do it the old-fashioned way. They put things on a CD, put it in the car, and listen to it when they commute.
Well, you can do that. It's just like with all your things. Our broadcast now can literally be found up, at Apple eventually. They can download it through Apple's whatever regiment.
Right, right.
You know, well, Apple
that's what I'm saying.
So Apple's got up there.
We never know where they're listening to us at
this
point.
That's true. They get it on your site, and the Blog Talk people distribute these broadcasts all over the place. So there is no idea where these people come in, you know, to get the information and as to what they do with it. Who knows? They'll visit your site or whatever, and wherever, the people in China and all those places. And that's the thing.
Well, anyway, we got to go here. But Les Paul is a unique man, and needs a tribute. But there's probably a few Les Pauls out there.
There's probably a few Les Pauls out there, and, you know, we do a few of these. We did Paul Harvey, we did Les Paul, and, you know, some others are coming up here shortly. And we try to, you know, get it as, you know, what we did before, the economic part of it, and where it is eventually at least going at this point in time with the technology. We both agree it's going more and more global, and one will have to be global. Jerry, as usual, it's nice talking to you about this, about remembering Les Paul. This is Boston Red on the 40th anniversary of the great festival at Woodstock in upstate New York. What you've just heard is our remembrance of Les Paul, presented by the veteran radio producer, personality, Versiosi, Jerry Pippin at jerrypippin.com. We'll close out with the many faces of Les Paul as Rhubart read his Countryside.
When you go down in Deep Ellum, to have a little fun, you've got to have your $15 when the policemen come. Oh, sweet mama, daddy's got them Deep Ellum blues. Now once I had a sweetheart who meant the world to me, but she hung around Deep Ellum, now she ain't what she used to be. Oh, sweet mama, daddy's got them Deep Ellum blues. Oh, sweet mama, daddy's got them Deep Ellum.
Les Paul took those country roots, added it to his love of jazz, and came up with his own unique style of a decade of hits with his wife, Mary Ford. We close with Les Paul and Mary Ford together. They may be now. I'm Jerry Pippin. Good night.
Love me, it's I love you.